Chapter 8. Veronica finds out about Marcos's death from her father just before school in the morning. She's still shaken when she gets there. One death was horrible, but something she felt she could leave to the police. With another murder, she suddenly feels unsafe. She's trying so hard not to think about Lily's body and her blood on the pavement that she nearly runs a stop sign on the drive. The school is running wild with rumors, which range from frighteningly believable to completely ridiculous. Veronica tunes them out. She hasn't slept well since Styles' fight on the beach. She doesn't want to admit it, and can't begin to explain it. Logan has hesitantly asked about it, saying it wasn't unreasonable if violence bothered her after what had happened, and she had shut him down so hard that now he's not speaking to her. She's pretty sure she owes him an apology, but isn't ready to give it yet. She knows that he's probably right, and certainly nobody else seems particularly bothered by Styles' behavior on the beach that night. The school is split between people treating him like a pariah and a quiet, adoring fan club. Even the people that hate him don't seem to be freaked out by him the same way. Veronica's content to quietly avoid him until she's figured out how to deal with her conflicted feelings on the matter. She wants to be content to avoid thinking about the murders of Peter Ferrer and Marcos Olivares, but she's pretty sure that's not going to happen. On the other hand, she didn't know either of them very well and, like Styles, quickly comes to the conclusion that they had nothing in common. Her father is texting her every 15 minutes to remind her not to get involved. She has repeatedly promised that it won't be a problem. In fact, she's in the middle of promising for the 7th time when someone pulls her aside, a boy she knows by sight but not by name. "Hey, can I talk to you for a second, Veronica?" "Step into my office," she says, and heads for the bathroom, giving him a closer look as she does so. He's gangly and awkward-looking, not unattractive, but sort of average, with brown hair cut in a bowl cut, and a moderate nervous twitch. "What can I do for you?" "You have to promise not to tell anyone," he says. "I'm the soul of discretion," Veronica says, holding her hand up in the Girl Scout salute. Ryan, right?" "Yeah," he nods a little. "It's about Marcos." Veronica looks down at the phone, on which she had just promised her father she wouldn't get involved in a murder investigation. She tucks it away and says, reluctantly, "If you know anything about what might have happened, you should go to the police." Ryan looks at her like she's crazy. After the last year or so under Lamb's rule, she can't entirely blame him, and she's not entirely sure she would go to the police herself if she were in his shoes. She can't stop this nagging suspicion that if something about Styles isn't right, his father might not be all right either. "Okay," she says, lifting her hands in surrender. "Lay it on me." Ryan swallows nervously and glances over his shoulder as if to check for eavesdroppers. "Have you heard of the SHIP website?" "Can't say that I have," Veronica says. "It was a chat room, an online thing for gay kids in Neptune." Veronica arches her eyebrows. "Must have gotten a lot of action in the past couple weeks," she says, thinking of their inevitable reaction to Styles' antics. "Yeah," Ryan agrees. "Look, Marcos posted there sometimes." Veronica's head snaps up. "Marcos was gay?" "Yes, no, I don't know. He didn't know. I think he was, but just hadn't managed to deal with it yet. His parents sent him up to this conversion camp over the summer, and he came back different. He hadn't posted on the SHIP website in months, but he still had an active membership. So did Peter." "So if someone is targeting gay kids," Veronica says. Ryan nods miserably. He's actually crying a little, wiping his eyes repeatedly. "I'm sorry," he says. I kept hoping if Marcos pulled his head out of his ass." Veronica grabs a paper towel and hands it over to him. "I need to know who else was a member of the website," she says. They could be in danger. I know, but I can't just give you their names. Not in this town. Not even with what's happened in the last month. I'll give you their online handles. After that, you're on your own. Veronica sighs, but agrees, because it's clear that Ryan's not going to budge, and she thinks she can get around it anyway. She tucks the list into one of her binders and goes looking for Mac after school. She's in the computer lab with Cassidy. What are you two up to? Veronica asks them. Cassidy gives Veronica a somewhat suspicious look, like he isn't sure why she's asking. But Mac just smiles at her and says, Cassidy's stepmom is giving a big pitch to some investment types tomorrow, and we're working on the portfolio. Apparently, it's been hard to sell because Cassidy's betting against incorporation, and most people think it'll pass. Really? Veronica looks at Cassidy somewhat surprised. You're not in favor of incorporation? It's not about whether I'm in favor of it or not, Cassidy says. It's about which way I think it'll go, and which way I can make more profit. Veronica laughs and says, I've seen your profits in FBLA. I'm willing to take your word on it. Mind if I borrow your girlfriend for a minute? Yeah, no problem, Cassidy says. I have some stuff I need to do anyway. Later, Mac. Bye, she says, waving as he leaves the classroom. No goodbye kiss? Veronica asks. Cassidy is strictly against PDA, Mac says, then frowns and says, or, for that matter, A. But we're, you know, working on it. I think he's just so used to being told he's not good at anything that he's afraid I'll tell him he's a bad kisser or something. Anyway, what's up? I need you to get me some information off a website, Veronica says. There's a site for gay teens in Neptune. I have the URL and usernames, but... She sees the way Mac has stiffened. You run it, don't you? Yeah, that's the site I was trying to get Danny to help me moderate. Mac says, Veronica, I can't just give you that information. I mean... It takes Veronica almost half an hour to convince Mac that she really, really needs it, that lives could be at stake, and that she absolutely promises she'll handle it with the utmost discretion and make sure that nobody else gets a hold of it except the sheriff. She's come to the conclusion that she'll have to share it with him. She simply doesn't have the manpower to think about protective details for the kids who are at the highest risk. Finally, after going back and forth for a while, Mac agrees and prints out a list of the website's members. She clearly doesn't like handing it over, but she does. She explains that the website wasn't just for gay kids, but that anyone questioning their sexuality or even feeling GLBT-friendly could join up. There are currently about 20 members. Along with those, Mac gives her the IP addresses for two or three people who had joined to troll the community and had ultimately been banned. By the time Veronica gets to the station, she's folded and unfolded the list so that it's starting to become torn. Her fingers have worried at the ink, smudging it. She's increasingly nervous as she steps into the police station. She can only imagine how Lam would react to being brought this information. It isn't pretty. Leo is at the desk. He looks up and gives her a polite, professional smile. Hey, Veronica, he says. Have you been? Not bad, she says, and lets out a breath. I need to talk to the sheriff. Leo gives her a look up and down, and then nods. I'll get him for you, he says, and heads into the back. He comes out a few minutes later with Sheriff Stalinsky in tow. Leo gives them both a nod and turns back to what he was doing. And the sheriff turns to Veronica. Miss Mars, what can I help you with? He asks. There's nothing mocking in his expression. I need to speak with you privately. Veronica twists the piece of paper into a cylinder in her hands. It's about the murders. The sheriff's eyebrows climb, but he doesn't miss a beat. Could you follow me into my office? He says, and gestures for her to head on back, starting down the short hallway. The office looks a lot different from how it did under Lamb's supervision. There's almost no decoration at all, and there's piles of paper everywhere, signs of actual work being done. Once they're inside, he closes the door, offering her a seat and then backing off to avoid crowding her. He knows a nervous teenager when he sees one. Instead of sitting back down at the desk, he leans one shoulder against the wall opposite the door. She doesn't need the pointed reminder of the desk to tell her that he's the sheriff.
What's on your mind?
Well, Veronica says, after Peter was killed, a lot of kids at school assumed it was one of Tad's friends, you know? In response to the fact that gay bashing is now actually a crime in Neptune. And I know that after Marcos was killed, you're probably thinking that's been ruled out, right?
You're about to tell me that I'm wrong, aren't you? Stalinsky says with a heavy sigh.
I'm not saying Marcos was gay, Veronica says. I guess he was questioning. But there was a website, an online chat forum for Neptune students who were LGBT. And he was one of the members. Peter was too. If anyone had somehow gotten a list of identities from that website,
it could very well double as a list of nicely packaged targets. He goes to sit down now and unearths a pad of paper and a pen from the cluster disaster that it's turned into in such a short period of time. So, this website. I don't suppose you can give me the URL. I'm assuming that everyone posts under a screen name or anonymously.
Veronica nods. I have a list of members, the real names. My friend runs the website and she got it for me, but it's really, really important that nobody finds out who's on this list. I mean, not just because of the murders.
I understand, Stalinsky says. Coming out is a big deal for anyone, especially around here, it seems. No one needs their secrets made public. I can respect that.
Veronica takes a breath. The paper in her hands has been mangled. After two false starts, she manages to hand it to him, trying not to think of Lamb's smirking face, and God knew what he would have done with this information. I don't know how we can protect potential victims without spilling their secret, she says. He takes it from her gently, with care for both the paper and for the girl handing it to him, who's clearly afraid he's going to turn on her somehow. At first, he was planning to tell her, "Let me worry about that." Not as a pat on the head, but to genuinely take the worry from her shoulders. But after watching her for a few moments, he knows that would be the wrong thing to say. She's like Stiles that way. Keeping her in the dark will only make her feel worse. And if anything happened, she would worry that it was her fault for giving out the information.
I'm going to start by making some private phone calls. I don't need anyone coming down here or squad cars at people's homes. That would be like waving a flag.
Some of the tension eases out of Veronica's shoulders, and she manages a little smile. The URL of the website is on there. Mac has matched up the usernames to the real names, and some of the kids are obviously more comfortable. Like, if you look in the forums, some of them mention that their parents know. So you could maybe start with them, and they might know how to get in touch with the ones that are, further in the closet, without alarming anybody.
That's an excellent idea, Sheriff Stalinsky says. Then he starts to think about the unpleasant task of protection details, and how well he doesn't know most of the men and the few women in his employ. How well do you know the officers here?
Well enough, Veronica says with a sigh. You can't do it. You wouldn't have enough decent ones. Unless we can narrow it down somehow. But Peter and Marcos, they didn't really have anything in common besides both being on this website.
Well, I'll have to keep looking. Stalinsky turns the pad of paper around to face her and holds out the pen. In the meantime, can you give me a list of officers that you're pretty sure won't have trouble on a case like this? Not enough is still some.
If nothing else, he figures that the boys are more likely to be targeted than the girls. Gay women didn't always generate the same knee-jerk violent reaction as men, and both victims so far had been male. Veronica picks up the pen and sets it down. It's probably better if you ask my dad, she says. He would know better than I would.
Then I'll do that. He takes both things, then asks, is he in town today?
Yeah, he was at the office the last time I checked.
Veronica hesitates. She wants to bring up the fight on the beach, the way Styles invited an ass-kicking, but then delivered one twice as hard. She thinks he should know, but just isn't sure what to say. She decides to try to go about it in a roundabout fashion. Styles isn't sure it has to do anything with homophobia. He said after Peter was killed that if it was because he was gay, the timing was weird. That if people were upset about Tad, they would have gone after him, not after Peter, since he's been out of the closet for years and they've left him alone. The sheriff sighs, wearing a somewhat put-upon expression. Styles is a target that's easy to see but difficult to hit, so his base logic is valid, but sometimes when people miss their first target, they go for an easier mark. I'm not going to give up other avenues of investigation, but I can't ignore this one either. Yeah, I guess I'm a little concerned that he might take matters into his own hands, Veronica says hurriedly. Styles is her friend, but she's freaked out right now, more than she wants to admit. She's not sure she can trust Sheriff Stilinski, particularly if it's in regards to his son. His reply here might give her a better idea of whether or not she can. Styles has a problem backing down when he feels he's being pushed or cornered. But Sheriff Stilinski rubs at his forehead with his palm. That wouldn't be a condition you know anything about, would it, Miss Mars? I suspect you just go about it differently. Veronica is somewhat taken aback by this. Well, yeah, I guess so. I'm just not sure how to put this, but... Veronica, if this is your way of trying to protect your friend and not betray Styles' trust by telling me what he's been up to, I know all about the fight on the beach, Stilinski says, not unkindly. I know my son. I know what he's capable of, and I know how he goes about protecting himself. Veronica can't help but give a sigh of relief. Okay, I just wanted to make sure you knew. I appreciate that. I also appreciate this. He gestures with the list that Veronica had brought him. No one should ever have to feel nervous or unsure about coming in here with information. Well, no one innocent, at least. Ha! Yeah, well, Veronica stands up. I should be going. Things to do, people to see, etc. Try not to get into more trouble than you can handle, and rest assured that the department really is looking into things for once, he says, and stands as well, to show her out. Styles is 8 miles deep into Wikipedia surfing. Currently, he's reading about the simulated Nazi invasion of Winnipeg in 1942, although he couldn't have told you how he got there, when his phone chimes. He glances at it to see that he has a message from his father. It reads, "Come by the station when you have a minute. Not an emergency. Do not panic." He can't help but shake his head a little in rueful amusement. His father knows him too well sometimes. He finishes reading the article. Manfully resists clicking on the numerous interesting-looking links it contains, and then goes on the hunt for his shoes. They seem to have disappeared. He stands in his room with his hands on his hips for a minute before he lets out a huff and goes out onto the landing. "Okay, who took my shoes?" he asks. Lydia pokes her head out of the bedroom. "You've been working too hard and worrying too much." "You are absolutely right about both those things," Styles says. "But if you think hiding my shoes will stop me from doing either of them, you clearly don't know me at all." Lydia rolls her eyes and disappears from sight. Styles hears Scott say, "I told you guys it wouldn't work." And then some unknown pack member tosses his sneakers out into the hallway. "Going to see my dad at the station," Styles says. "I'll be back in a bit." By the time he gets downstairs, Derek has already put on his service dog vest and shifted. Styles clips the leash to the vest and jogs out to the Jeep. Neptune is bigger than Beacon Hills, and it takes almost 15 minutes to get to the station. Styles is tense and edgy, although really no more than usual. His research into what might cut someone on the back of the neck before killing them has yielded absolutely no results. He's hoping his father has better news. Leo greets him and says, "He's in a meeting and said not to interrupt him. You can wait if you want." "Yeah, I'll hang out," Styles says. He takes out his phone, starts up a game of Tetris, pauses it, and surfs the web, fingers thumbing absently, anxiously at the screen. Derek presses up against his leg, and Styles stops to take a breath and think about how fidgety he's being. "Yeah, I'm all right," he murmurs. And then, 2 seconds later, someone is shouting in his father's office, and he jumps. "Dare you ask that?" Styles casually leans back in his chair, inching towards the door to the office. His hearing isn't good enough to hear what they're saying when voices aren't raised, but he can certainly hear them now, including his father, who sounds surprisingly pissed off about something. "Do you want your son's killer brought to justice?" Sheriff Stilinski asks. "Because if so, I need you to be completely honest with me. This is important." "It's completely irrelevant and not even true," the other voice shouts. "And if you say anything to anyone..." "Sir, I respect your right to privacy," Stilinski says, his voice somewhat strained as he continues. "And I'll do you the courtesy of not offering my own opinion on your opinion of your son's sexuality, but that doesn't change the fact that it is very relevant to this investigation." "You know," a new voice says from outside the office, and Styles startles and flails and nearly falls out of the chair. "I've heard it works better if you press a glass against the wall." "Ah, yeah, no kidding," Styles says, rubbing his hand over the back of his neck and eyeing this newcomer. He's a little on the short and chubby side, balding and weary-looking. "Sorry, I was just waiting for my dad to get out of his meeting." "What a coincidence. So am I," the man says, and extends his hand. "Keith Mars." "Oh, Veronica's dad," Styles says, and shakes the offered hand. "She talks about you all the time." "God forbid," Keith says, smiling. "And you must be the famous Styles. I heard that to combat your lack of pirate points, you brought a solar-powered hot plate to school and started making tacos for all your friends."
"Hey, I'm eco-conscious," Styles says, amused that this is what Keith has chosen to focus on, rather than his many other misadventures.
"So, what brings you to the station?"
"Your dad wanted my advice on some personnel issues," Keith says. "I needed to come by the station to check for a bail jumper I brought in last week, so I figured I would just stop by."
"Personnel issues, huh?" Styles asks. Keith just smiles at him. "I suppose saying, it's confidential, would get me about as far with you as it would with my daughter."
"Maybe a little further," Styles says, "but only because I'd rather beg my dad for information than you."
This is met with a laugh, and then the door to the sheriff's office is flung open, and Marcos Olivares's parents storm out. The mother has obviously been crying. Sheriff Stilinski stands in the doorway, watching them depart with a frown creasing his features. Then he sees Keith, and the expression clears.
"Thanks for coming," he says, shaking his hand. "I appreciate the help." He sees Styles and says, "Do you mind waiting another few minutes?"
"I'm cool," Styles says. "Just chillin', like a villain."
"Stop talking," his father says.
"Yes, sir."
As the door to the sheriff's office swings shut, Derek gets to his feet and stretches. Then he starts purposefully walking towards the foyer of the building.
"What? What?" Styles says, getting up and following him. Because really, what else can he do?
Derek tugs him along until they reach the vending machines, then gets up on his hind legs and presses the button for Coke. Then he gives Styles an expectant look. Styles grumbles but reaches for his wallet.
"It's not that I don't have enough meds on board," he says. "Just that I'm tense, okay? Sometimes I'm just tense."
Derek just rolls his eyes, and he clearly isn't going to budge on the issue. So Styles buys the can of Coke and chugs the first half of it while he waits for his father. Keith comes out a minute later. The two men shake hands, and then Keith gives a little wave to Stiles before he departs. Then Stiles charges into his father's office and shuts the door.
Marcos was gay, he says immediately, and his parents didn't tell you?
Sheriff Stilinski sighs and sinks into his chair. Marcos might have been gay. His parents sent him to some camp over the summer to try to straighten him out.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Stiles says.
His father sighs and lifts his hands in surrender. Apparently there's an online chat forum that a bunch of the teens in Neptune use. Marcos wasn't an active member, but he was registered. So was Peter Ferrer. That is the first definite connection we've found, and it ties into the hate crime theory. Unfortunately, there are almost 24 kids on this website, and the posts number in the hundreds. I just don't have time to go through it all myself. You want to do a little detective work for me?
Oh my god, Stiles says. I thought you'd never ask.
I'm going to give you the website and the online handles that Peter and Marcos were using. Go through and see who they talked to. See if anyone was giving them a hard time. See if they mentioned being threatened or followed. Anything out of the ordinary.
Got it,
Stiles says, grabbing the piece of paper his father is holding. Do not let it interfere with your schoolwork, and don't share it with anyone outside the pack.
Sir, yes, sir, Stiles says, still making grabby motions.
His father sighs, mutters something about how he's probably going to regret this, and hands it over. When Veronica isn't overrun the next day by people from the ship website demanding to know who sold them out, she starts to relax and get back to the larger mystery at hand. She's been focusing for the past few hours on figuring out what Stiles had said to Derek at the end of the fight. He was looking in the direction of the camera at the time, with his head only slightly turned. She's downloaded some lip-reading software and hopes that she'll be able to get it translated. But in the end, it's not illuminating at all. Stiles is standing there, breathing hard, trembling a little, and when Derek walks over to him, he looks up and says, "I have to get out of here." Which seems like a perfectly reasonable thing to say, if not for the fact that his friends were all treating him like some ticking time bomb. The video has been posted on YouTube by several different classmates and has been passed around from site to site, never quite reaching that stage of epic virality occupied by Call Me Maybe, but never quite going still either. That doesn't seem too unusual, considering the content. Fight videos are as popular as parkour videos on the internet, and this is something of both. She might have discounted it completely, if not for the fact that one of the sites has taken the video and titled it "The Boy in Red versus Four Epic Failures." Everywhere Stiles goes, Veronica keeps seeing the color red. The site has disallowed commenting, which is disappointing. She was hoping to gain some insight there. So she just watches the video over and over, not even sure what she's looking for or why that damned red sweatshirt seems so important to her. "What are you trying to solve, Mars?" she murmurs to herself. She's looking through an image gallery that has some high-quality, if extremely watermarked, prints of Derek Hale's artwork for sale. She startles when Mac leans over her shoulder and says, "That's cool. I think I'm gonna buy it and hang it on my wall."
"You think?"
Veronica asks. It's one of the earlier paintings, with Stiles and just a few wolves. His face isn't visible. It's one of Derek's. You know, Stiles' boyfriend.
"Guy's got talent,"
Mac says, dropping into the seat beside her. "How'd it go yesterday?"
"Fine," she says. "Still working on it."
"Looks like you're working on an art project," Mac says.
"I'll admit to some mild curiosity about why Derek always paints his boyfriend wearing a red hoodie and surrounded by wolves,"
Veronica says. Mac has the same immediate impression as Wallace.
"Metaphorical," she says. "You know, because of everything Stiles has been through."
"A good guess, but..." Veronica flips through the gallery to find the picture where Stiles is lying in the wolf cuddle pile. The wolves are pretty obviously friends. There's another, more of a sketch, where Stiles is holding a shepherd's stick and leading a group of wolves in a line. I just don't get it. I guess art analysis isn't my thing. Why wolves?
They're not even all wolves,
Max says through a mouthful of apple. She taps the screen of Veronica's laptop, indicating what Veronica had taken for a cream-colored wolf with dark markings. That's a dog. Well, probably a wolf-dog mix. Part German Shepherd or Husky, maybe. Veronica resists the urge to throw her hands up in the air. I have no idea what that might mean.
I have no idea why you care, Wallace says, sitting down across from her.
To Mac, he says, she's obsessed with those paintings. You talked to Logan yet?
No, Veronica says. I'll find him after school so I can do my groveling without an audience. Thank you.
She glances around to make sure nobody's close enough to be within hearing distance. Look, promise not to tell anybody I said this, but I just can't help but think it can't be a coincidence that someone moved to town who has obvious violent tendencies, and now two people have been violently murdered.
Mac nearly chokes on her apple. You think Stiles had something to do with the murders?
Isn't his dad the sheriff?
Yes, Veronica says.
So what?
Okay, fair point, but Wallace shakes his head. Come on, that makes the opposite of sense. Stiles beat the shit out of some guys who were giving him a hard time for being gay. Why kill a couple other gay kids on the down low?
We don't know that's why they were targeted, Veronica says, and shrugs. Maybe he's framing one of the homophobes for it.
I don't think Stiles is the kind of person who would kill two random guys to get someone else in trouble, Max says. He seems to be a little more, I don't know, direct than that. Like, when he was pissed at Travis and his pals, he beat the shit out of them. He didn't frame them for murder.
I'm just saying, he's not entirely without motive, Veronica says. And the timing is just so weird, otherwise. Peter's been out of the closet for over 2 years. Why would somebody kill him now?
And Stiles is new in town, so that makes him a good suspect.
Yeah, I guess, Veronica says.
She shifts uncomfortably and says,
and there's something else. He obviously loves his dad and wants his career to succeed. So maybe he's giving his dad a big crime to solve. Something that will really make the papers, make him famous.
That is the definition of twisted, Wallace says. Where do you come up with this shit?
Look, something is weird about Stiles, Veronica says. Something, it's like a puzzle where all the pieces don't quite fit together. How can one kid have had so many horrible things happen to him? First, there's a string of murders in Beacon Hills that were committed by either Derek's uncle or Allison's aunt, depending on which source you trust. Then someone tries to kill Stiles' father. Then he gets caught in this big shootout in the woods. And now this? It's like, wherever he goes, trouble follows.
And you think that somehow that's connected to the fact that his boyfriend likes to paint him in a red sweatshirt?
Wallace says. He sounds skeptical.
I'm saying that we haven't once seen Stiles wear red since he came to Neptune, except for that fight. He wore the hoodie, and now some random website has titled the video The Boy in Red, like it's some official title or something.
Or like, they didn't know who it was, so they named it based on the age of the guy and the shirt he was wearing, Wallace says.
Damn you and your logic, Veronica says, and rubs both her hands over her face. Maybe you're right, and I'm overthinking this, but Stiles just seemed so comfortable with violence. At the pool party, when I startled him in the house, he didn't scream or back away. He went for a weapon. He didn't twitch an eyelid when he admitted to me that, yeah, Derek's uncle killed Allison's aunt. And then he disappeared. Nobody knows what happened to him.
And your conclusion is what? Mac asks. Stiles killed him and hid the body, and now he's killing other people?
My conclusion is that I want answers, Veronica says. Can we just leave it at that?
Wallace and Mac exchange a glance.
In that glance, Wallace is apparently nominated spokesman, because he says, Can I say something you aren't gonna like? Veronica lets out a sigh. Of course you can. Are you sure that you're not trying to make this about you? That you have to have some sort of mystery to solve? That if you can trust the sheriff to do his job, if you don't have a reason to believe his kid is a suspect, you don't have to investigate, and that's what's bothering you? Veronica grits her teeth in frustration and forces herself to remember that these people are her friends. No, I'm not sure of that, she says. I'm not sure of that at all. But as long as me poking around at Derek's gallery and searching random shit on the internet isn't hurting anybody, then I feel I'm entitled. Well, that seems fair, Max says. She gives Veronica a minute. Anyway, I thought Stiles and his friends weren't in town when Peter was killed. We only have their word on that, Veronica says. And I have virtually no information on the crime scenes. Sheriff Selinsky seems to honestly want to solve this, but how can I really judge that? And I can't get information from the police the way I used to. Lamb was stupid enough that I could sneak it out underneath his nose. Selinsky runs a much tighter ship. Leo's already told me that he doesn't even want to be seen with me because he's afraid of endangering his job if Sheriff Selinsky thinks he's snooping for me again. In theory, Mac purses her lips. Look, I won't say I like this or that I think you're right about Stiles, but if he did commit a crime back in Beacon Hills, the extremely theoretical murder of Peter Hale, that would get him listed as a suspect right away, right? And then his dad would probably be removed from the case due to conflict of interest. That's true, Veronica says. So, start on the disappearance of Peter Hale and go from there? Hey, at least it'd be a place to start, Wallace says. Veronica looks at the picture of Stiles in his red hoodie and his wolves. You're right about that, she says. At least it would give me a place to start.